ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Kirk Herbstreit and Matt Barry.
You know, there are some Mondays that are just better than others here on the ESPN College Football Podcast. It is a tradition unlike any other. Matt Barry alongside Kirk Herbstreit. Halfway point of the season. Kirk, I wish I knew where to start. So here's what I'm going to do. Since you called the game of the day, I'm going to pass the ball to you and just let you begin where you want, because it was a historic Saturday unlike anything we've seen in a long, long time.
Yeah, I'm speechless. You know, I mean, I don't even know what to say about it. You know, we had the noon kick this week. Chris and I, they moved us, you know, being in Dallas with OU Texas. And, you know, you're thinking it's first play. By the way, let me give you a quick story. So game day is on the field and I've got to get from the field. Mark Cuban was our celebrity picker. Corso puts on Bebo and hey, shake everyone's hand real quick. And then it's like, you know, it's like 12:07. And I got to walk about 6 minutes to get to where we're going to go. So I'm on the field. I go up the tunnel. The teams, by the way, were like salmon swimming upstream. We're trying to go up against the team as they're all coming down the same tunnel. So we're like working along. We're like shimmying along the tunnel, like against the wall, and shoulder pads bouncing off your shoulder. And they're all in game mode. So you get finally through all the way up to the top. Now we're on the outside of the stadium, walking by the corn dogs and the state fair. Hey, you suck. Hey, all right. Hey, what's up? Hey, you. Hey. Going through that for about six minutes. Now we're walking. You can hear, you know, noise from the stadium. We're outside of the stadium. We're trying to get to the elevator up to the booth. And we finally get there. The crowd's going crazy. You could hear the like a cannon goes off, kickoff. We get in the elevator, we go up. Everything's, by the way, logistically, they're waiting on us. Everything was great. They had done their recon. Everybody, stadium was awesome. We go straight up, get to the floor, come right off. They're like, there's security guy, this way. I'm like jogging down the hallway, open up the door, and our guys that are in the booth are like, let's go. You know, I go in there, I grab my headphones. As I'm grabbing my headphones, Casey Thompson is throwing in the middle of throwing the football to Xavier Worthy. And I'm thinking it's, you know, it'll be a 3-yard gain or whatever. So I just put my headphones on and he breaks a tackle and goes, whatever it was, 70 yards for a touchdown. 75 yards for a touchdown. And I'm like getting my, the guy's, he's connecting my stuff and I'm watching him score. He's at the 50, the 40, the 30. And about by the time he got to the end zone, I finally got my stuff situated. Fowler's going crazy, you know, with the call and the score. And, you know, we go to a crowd reaction on the touchdown. And then my producer, Bill Bunnell, goes, Herbie, replay. You know, and I just start talking about, you know, what I think I just saw. And that was a precursor for the next 4 hours of what was going to happen. First play of the game, block punt, score a couple plays later. It's 14-0, and we're like a minute into the game, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, it's 28-7, and I kept telling Fowler, I've done this game a bunch with Brent. This thing is wild. I mean, let's not lose focus here. This thing could – it's not over. I mean, Texas looks great, but with Lincoln and that offense and Rattler, you never know. You know, they can score fast. Let's just see what happens. And – then the story that unfolds, say, you know, Rattler's trying to make a play, he fumbles, and here we go. Here comes Caleb Williams into the game, and the next 2.5 quarters were some of the best football. I was thinking back. I've called some fun games over my time. That's definitely top five. Maybe my favorite game I've ever had in 6 years. That was incredible experience.
It when he hit Joshua Moore – When Thompson hit Joshua Moore to make it 28-7, and I'm thinking, this could be a Red River route. This is an absolute bludgeoning. And I'm in the studio with Sam Acho. And he's like, it's not over. I'm telling you, Matt, it's not over.
Exactly.
And he was steadfast on it. He's like, we're not done yet. We've got to be careful.
He's right. Yeah.
And then you start seeing the tie change. I've covered that game 6 times. It's my favorite game in college football.
It's so cool.
I worked in Dallas. I worked at Oklahoma. I love that it's split down the middle. And you just don't know what you're going to get. But when he made the switch to Caleb, which I thought it'll go down as probably one of the biggest one of the best coaching decisions he's made as a head coach, because Kirk, he had to do something. Lincoln had to do something. And so you bring in this Caleb kid, five-star true freshman, D.C. area. He just starts slinging it all over the yard. Really didn't give a damn who he's throwing it to. He's just slinging it. And it goes down as the biggest comeback in Red River history. You could certainly argue the best game in that series history. And it's been going on since 1900. I mean, what a finish for Oklahoma. And now Lincoln's got a decision to make. It was incredible.
Well, and how about Kennedy Brooks, too? I mean, with all the hoopla about Caleb Williams, and there should be, Kennedy Brooks just caught fire, running with physicality, getting up some great blocks from the receivers and tight ends, getting to the second level of those defenses. And, you know, I think, and they're getting ready to kick a field goal. I think everybody thought, including Kennedy, they're going to kick a field goal. And then,
yeah,
I mean, he's like, oh my God, I'm taking this thing to the house. But yeah, it was just, our cameras caught Lincoln Riley as the third quarter ended. We went to break and he pulled his team in, man. And he just started pounding his fist about, and he's like, pulled everybody in. And they, I'm going to tell you, I don't know Spencer Rattler. And I always wish nothing but the best for all these guys. But this is just a fact. If you watch how Oklahoma's played up to this point, it feels like just something's been missing, right? And it may not be true next Saturday or the Saturday after that. But for this Saturday, this guy, Caleb Williams, who's highly touted, didn't even play high school football because of COVID in 2020. And this team responded to him. This offense responded to him. The defense responded to him. Look at the Oklahoma defense.
Yeah.
They responded. The coaches, the stadium, the fans, everybody responded to what I would call the it factor of this quarterback. And so, and Spencer Rattler is a physically very gifted guy, but he's been put in a weird situation. You know, he's getting booed last, you know, 2 weeks ago, and now you got the We Want Caleb chance, and then the kid comes in and he does that. I'm just telling you, when I watch quarterbacks when I'm calling a game as much off the field as I watch them on. And when 13 came into the game and did what he did, he, after, remember the fumbled snap, and then he picks it up and gathers it and throws a touchdown. That's when it became like, uh-oh, for Texas.
Yep.
I watched Caleb Williams. All right, we'll be back after this. I'm watching 13. He goes into the kickoff coverage huddle, the quarterback, freshman, into the kickoff coverage huddle, dapping guys up, hitting them on the back. Let's go, let's go. Then he jogs down to the defensive huddle, getting the defense fired up, getting them ready. Let's go. You got, we got this, we got. And I'm just like, wow. Wow. I was more impressed with him on the sideline than I was with him on the field. To be that young of a guy who had played, I don't know, a handful of snaps in some red zone short yardage situations, you know.
Right.
And has had some moments, a highly decorated, number one ranked dual threat guy. I mean, he's got a bright future, but I'm just saying for now to be that young. And you saw the game. He's up at the line. He's changing the protection. He's like hand signals to over here. He's got this over here. I'm like, I was so impressed with his preparation. He didn't know he was going to be the guy.
No clue.
And for him to put that much work in during the week to be able to be the guy says a lot about who he is and the wiring of him. And it says a ton about Lincoln Riley and how Lincoln Riley, if you asked him, hey man, Caleb going to play in this game? He would have said, cause we asked, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. He'll be in, we'll get him into, you know, red zone, short yardage. We need him. He's got his own package. But clearly, Lincoln did the work that he needed to do to get him ready to run the offense.
Yeah.
And when he went in there, the threat of him running opened up other running lanes for Kennedy Brooks, and he was running, and the throw and the play. I mean, it was just like, man, it was fun to watch, and I can't wait to see the next chapter. You know, now we got TCU. And you're Lincoln Riley, and you got Spencer Rattler, who's all-world kind of guy, who's been on the ropes in his career the last few weeks. And then you got this new guy that's created so much energy and juice for the whole team, not the offense. There's only one answer, man. There's only one answer. He's got to go with the kid. How will that impact seven? How does that impact seven's attitude in the locker room? takes a very mature guy who's got a big future and big goals to take that and be like, yes, sir, coach, I'm here to back up Caleb and offer him all my support. Tough. Tough.
Yeah.
Can he do that? Can he do that?
We're going to find out. I mean, I'll tell you what, this is an undercard in the game. And I don't think many people pointed it out. I know you guys did during the broadcast, but they brought Spencer Rattler off the bench for the 2-point conversion. My guess is because Spencer had worked on that play and Caleb hadn't worked on that 2-point conversion. So you needed Seven to invest still in the game.
He had to come on. And he did.
And he got the 2-point conversion. But I'm with you. Oklahoma looked like Oklahoma when Caleb Williams got in there.
No doubt.
And
no doubt.
That's why these coaches get paid millions of dollars, because you're going to have to go to the highest rated recruit in his class, Spencer Rattler, and say, hey, you know what, man? Our best chance to win is Caleb, and you're going to need to. And keep in mind, Spencer was one of the first guys to come out with his own logo during NIL. Like, he made himself into a brand, and now he may not even be the guy at Oklahoma anymore.
Yeah, and I think publicly and with the media, my guess, we're sitting here talking on a Monday, my guess is that Lincoln's going to spin this as, hey, we need them both. You know, they're both going to have a role. But they got to go to practice, right? Someone's going to take the ones. Someone's going to run out there on Monday practice, Tuesday practice, Wednesday practice. Someone's going to take the snaps. So 13 and 7, they're going to know the deal. They might tell the media whatever, but they're going to know what's going on. And I just want to see, because I'm telling you, man, you just mentioned NIL, transfer portal. This is a third year player. What if he just decides, opt out, going back to Phoenix, going to get ready for the draft? He could do that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a different world today than it was when I played. It was a different world than it was 5 years ago. And how does he handle that? Jalen Hurts is the best example of a guy handling it, standing right there at Alabama, taking the heat, and getting benched for Tua and finishing the next year after Tua came off the bench to win the national title, helped them win the SEC championship, let Alabama do their thing that year. Then the following year, he left as a graduate and went over to OU. So there are examples, but man, that's a diamond in the rough to me. I'm very interested. If they say 13, you're QB1, Spencer, we're going to have a role for you, man. You got to keep your head up. There's a place for you here. How does he handle that? Be a really, really interesting dynamic, because coaches now are dealing with these quarterbacks where they're trying to keep everyone happy, happy, especially a veteran like Spencer Rattler. So let's stay tuned to see how this thing unfolds.
And as we button up OU Texas and what was, I mean, that would have been the game of the year in any other year. We just happen to have a brilliant Saturday. But Lincoln also has to understand, and you know this as well, you can also lose the entire team if you make the wrong decision. Don't tell me anybody in that locker room and in that facility, they know Caleb's the guy. And you've got to be careful with that.
Yep.
You know, you got to be careful with your selection process, because the locker room's watching and they know who they're better with. And so you'd mention, and listen, TCU's the last team I'd want to run into after a win like that, because Gary Patterson, they've been up and down this year, but he always gets one. He'll get you once. Because I covered Gary for 5 years out there, and he finds a way at least one time to do something you didn't think they could do. And if I'm Oklahoma, I proceed with caution.
Yes, yes. The other game that stood out, there were a bunch, but the Penn State-Iowa game, we knew going in that was like the game of the week and such a big implications for a game played, in mid-October. Kinnick Stadium, always a tough place to play. To me, it ended up proving to be the difference in the football game, in the second half. You can make an argument if you're a Penn State fan, if Sean Clifford doesn't get dinged, really all they need with that lead is a couple first downs, work the clock, and they probably are able to escape with a win. But once he went out, it was if they were just holding on to a life raft in the middle of the Pacific Ocean and just trying not to go down. It just felt like, here comes Iowa. Here comes Iowa. You know what I mean? And I just felt that that Iowa deserves credit. Kinnick Stadium deserves credit. That defense, again, with the turnovers, deserves credit. living in Penn State territory. Penn State starting, especially when the backup came in, they're starting their drives, you know, inside the 10, inside the 15. I mean, the field always seems to just tilt in favor of Iowa this year. And when it happens this many times, you know, like six straight times, this is not luck. This is kind of who they are, you know, and got to give them credit. I've heard cynics, people, you know, I talk with people, they're like, Iowa, they're so overrated. There's no way they're number two or three in the country. They're living a charmed life. It's going to catch up to them. Maybe it will. I don't know. But six games in, their formula works. And this veteran defense is playing together. They have the best punter in college football that, you know, probably deserves more credit. Torrey Taylor. Great. He's a big part of who they are and pinning people. When you combine the defense and the turnovers and getting people off the field with the punter, Torrey Taylor, pinning people back, and then their offense just not losing the game. It's a formula that Jim Tressel won all the way to a national championship in 2002. And that's what Iowa, that's who they are right now. And so give them all the credit in the world. They deserve it.
Yeah, Iowa loves who they are. They love being cheered for 60-yard punts. I mean, they're probably one of the only teams in the country that appreciates good special teams, at least the fans do. Yeah. And I find it interesting because we just talked about managing quarterbacks. Keep in mind who Penn State's backup quarterback was last year. Will Levis, starting quarterback at Kentucky. And so it's a completely different game for Penn State if Will Levis is still around when their starter Sean Clifford gets hurt. But therein lies the effect of the transfer portal. Nowadays, when you've got a team like Sean Clifford, he goes out. So most teams have a backup that's got some experience or is the next guy in line. Well, the next guy in line at Penn State left.
Yeah.
And so you're going to see that a lot across the country. It's going to start manifesting itself little by little.
It's funny you bring that up because it's a big topic for me right now. It's a hot button for me is the backup quarterback. And it's not just because Taquan Roberson didn't have a great game and Caleb Williams did. I think it's about, look at Casey Thompson. He's theoretically a backup quarterback. Stetson Bennett is theoretically a backup quarterback, you know? Mm-hmm. So there are examples throughout the whole country where we've already seen it play a role in games and seasons. And because of the transfer portal and Will Levis as an example, Penn State losing their backup, that's the new world. That's the new reality. And it can cost you a national championship. It can cost you a conference championship because you got to turn to a guy who maybe has a bright future, but let's be honest, game's moving too fast right now for him. We have to really limit him with our playbook. We're just trying to just not lose the game. And now you're in a tough spot. So I think this is more of a topic now because of the portal and because these coaches, like I said, you know, in the 90s or 2005, 2010, 2015, coaches are like, here's the deal with it. Practice, get better. Right. That's how they talk. I mean, it was like, that's the story. I mean, sorry, but the other guy's playing better. And you sat there and tried to get better. And now coaches are like, hey, Sparky, you're looking good today. You're working so hard. I'm so proud of you. And tell you what, you're going to get a chance now. They're sitting there and they're trying to, he's not the guy, but we need him to be mentally ready and we don't want him to leave. And just such a bizarre era at that position.
So we're kind of on something here because you're going to get Kirk 1 year with two bona fide five stars in your QB room. You get it for one. Like this is Oklahoma's year. They have both. They have Spencer and Caleb right now. That's what they have. They're not going to have that, I don't think, next year. You get 1 year with that, and then once the separation occurs, kids are going to look to transfer. I look back at – I remember when Kevin Sumlin was in his heyday at Texas A&M. He pulled Kyle Allen, number one recruit in the country out of Scottsdale, Arizona. Following year, he pulls Kyler Murray, number one recruit out of Allen, Texas. He had both of them there for 1 year, I believe it was, while they were both on the depth chart. And there was that quarterback competition. Who, like, I want Kyler. I want Kyle. Kyler transfers. Kyle Allen transfers. That to me was the start of the five-star dog eat dog, because they're not both hanging out. And so these top teams in the country, it'd actually be interesting to do a study on some of these top teams in the country, who their bona fide one is, who's backing them up. Because I think you're going to see a lot of these top, like Ohio State's a prime example. They've got CJ Stroud. They've got McCord. They've got the Quinn Ewers. They got, who's the other? They've got another one in there that's a stud. I mean,
yeah, Jack Miller, I think.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. But that's rare. No other team has that. And so you're going to start watching some of these good teams across the country. Like Cade McNamara is backed up by the JJ Thomas.
JJ McCarthy at Michigan. Yeah.
He's a five star.
But he's young and he looks good when he comes in, but could he handle it all? Maybe he could. I don't
know. Find out. But the quarterback room's fascinated around college football, because I think you're going to see really it get teams like it got Penn State on Saturday more often than not.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, when Clifford left, I mean, what was it? 17-3. I think it was.
Yep.
And then Iowa got it to 17. I mean, think about it. You're up 17-3 in the first half and in Kinnick Stadium. That is a tough thing to do against a good Iowa team, and in control. And then Iowa just didn't blink, you know, whether, and I think if Clifford stays in, it's still a game that's going to go down the wire. You know, it's still going to be a game that Penn State's going to have to try to hold on to win. It would have just been a much easier thing to do if you had your starting quarterback. And I think anybody with a football eye could tell that Roberson's just not, he's just not ready. And so, and you imagine stepping into that scene for people that are not from the Big Ten. You know, people talk about the Big House. They talk about Ohio Stadium. They often talk about Camp Randall, talk about Penn State. And those are probably the schools that get the most attention. Even Nebraska get the most attention in the Big Ten. You talk to Big Ten people and you ask them, where's the toughest place to play when all these teams are good? And one of the first stadiums that come to mind is Kinnick Stadium. And a part of that is the configurement of the stadium. The stadium comes right down. There's not a track. The stadium is all the way down. So when you're getting a water, if your water is on the back wall, you know, where you're normally get a water, there's a guy in a cat hat, you know, right, like in the first row, and he's right there. He's a fan, and you could almost high five him. He's that close. And so you're getting your water, and it is a tight quarters of fans on top of you and an intimidating atmosphere. And when they're rolling, they get on a roll. It's tough. I think Saquon Barkley was asked this past week, toughest place to play when you're in college. And he said, Kinnick Stadium. And when they got it going in the second half, it was just an avalanche of momentum and hostility. And give them credit, give those fans credit, and give the Hawks credit. They survive. Now, every game they play to me, it's game on. Iowa's, because of the style that they play, the margin of error is so slight.
Yeah.
Purdue this week, you know, Jeff Brohm's thinking, you know, we got David Bell back. Let's go win a game. You know, they're not going to walk in there and be intimidated. So every game that they play and the style in which they play, let's just say they play a game where the defense creates zero turnovers.
Right.
And they start their average starting field position instead of the 38 is their own 20. Then you're going to have to see a different Iowa, right? And we'll see if that plays itself and how well they can adjust. I'm not saying they're not capable. I'm just saying we haven't seen that because of the way the stadium or the field has been tilted in their advantage and the punter. The hidden yardage for Iowa is insane every single week.
If I look at their schedule, the two road games that stick out at Wisconsin, October 30th, that's a nooner. You go to Camp Randall at noon, 11 a.m. Central. That's one they got to watch. And then at Nebraska, Thanksgiving weekend. Those are two games because otherwise, you know, Purdue, you had mentioned, still going to be tough with Jeff Brohm in that offense. Northwestern struggling this year. They go to Northwestern. Minnesota struggling a little bit this year. And then Illinois. So they really have – they had this week to get over the trap hurdle of coming off a big win at Wisconsin, at Nebraska, but Iowa's schedule, at least right now, looks pretty favorable for them to get to Indianapolis and represent the West, maybe undefeated and feeling really confident about whoever comes out of the East, because everybody on the East still has to play each other. That's going to be fascinating to watch.
By the way, and I know you know, there's four teams in the Big Ten East in the top 10 this week. I'm not saying it's going to finish that way, but with what Michigan State and Michigan have done, pretty fascinating to see. And it's just like, you know, the SEC West forever. You know, we've always bragged about the SEC West and the depth and its toughest division in football. And all of a sudden, with Mel Tucker and Jim Harbaugh, what their teams are doing to join Ohio State and Penn State, it's a heck of a – and throw in Iowa, you get five teams in the top 10. So Big Ten is really enjoying a big year. But I'm not as confident as you are in Iowa. Just – I'm not saying you're saying they're going to walk through and be undefeated. I think it's going to be a challenge. I think those games that you just mentioned – you know, Purdue's one thing, it's at home. Going to Camp Randall, you know, as bad as Wisconsin has looked, it's not never an easy game. Northwestern's down. Minnesota, they get at home. Illinois get at home. I think the two games that you said, Halloween at in Madison and then at Lincoln. Nebraska's played well enough to be 5-1 right now, and they are creating ways to lose games. You know, they have been snake bitten. I mean, they are turning the ball over at critical moments. They played well enough to beat Michigan State. They played well enough to hang in there with Michigan and maybe find a way to win that one at home. You feel bad. Even the Illinois game, they self-destructed. So, hey, they've got to be – the only game you felt like they were in over their skis was Oklahoma, and they actually played pretty well in that game. But other than that, man, they got to feel like, gosh, we could very easily be sitting here in a really good spot. And actually played seven games because they played Illinois week zero. They would zero, very yeah. easily could be 6-1. But instead, they're sitting there a game under 500 at 3-4. But my point is that will not be an easy game. It's a rivalry game to begin with. And we'll see down the road. But God bless Iowa. I love their style of football. I love Kirk Ferentz, one of the all-timers. Love the way he gets emotional because he cares so much after every win they have. So I'm all in. I love it. I'm just saying their style of football is tough to manage week in and week out. That's it.
So we'll see. We'll see the next couple of weeks of what Iowa's got for momentum. And now I don't think that there was anyone that thought – in fact, there wasn't. Maybe inside the Texas A&M locker room. But is that – Zach Calzada – and what he did to me is the gutsiest performance we've seen all year. Because, Kirk, that was a team and offense that looked inept the last month. I don't know where it came from, how it came from, but Texas A&M getting Alabama goes down is, for me, probably the biggest surprise we've had in the last few years based on what we've seen out of both teams leading up to this point. What a remarkable performance out of Calzada and the Aggies.
Yeah, good for Calzada. You're right. I mean, he's a young guy that was thrown in with the injury to King. And I thought Jimbo summed it up. He said, you know, he needs to be in the saddle. He just needs reps. He's got plenty of ability. But when Haynes King went down, we were talking earlier about backup quarterbacks, and Calzada was a guy that the game was moving a little bit fast for him. And Colorado early and Arkansas, Mississippi State, you know, he struggled. And I think Jimbo tried to protect him. So it limited what they could do offensively. And they were just trying to win it with trying to run the ball without an offensive line that was really owning the line of scrimmage the way they did a year ago. And even with so many talented backs led by Isaiah Spiller. But I think that was his answer. And I think in this game, he said, you know what, we got to take the training wheels off. There's no way we can win that way against Alabama. And they just looked like – this is what makes college football great. They looked like a team that was told you have no chance. Don't even go to the stadium. Stay home. Stay in your dorm. Stay in your apartment. Protect yourself. Don't go to that stadium and play Alabama because you suck. Even their own fans. Their fans can yell at guys like you and I all they want. They were cussing out their own team way more than we were because they're emotionally invested. And they're watching them lose – you know, to Arkansas at home. You know, they're watching them lose to Mississippi State. You know, and you can get all, you can be frustrated with anybody all you want, but the reality is the A&M team that showed up this past Saturday was not the A&M team that's shown up all year. And what did it take for them to show up like that? Being doubted, being told that they suck, that they don't have a chance. And it brought out a team that was possessed. This was not a fluke. I mean, to beat Alabama, you got to win the line of scrimmage. And they did. Like Mike
Their
Elko.
Defensive front.
But I mean, their defensive front's great. And they played with brutality. But Mike Elko on third downs gave a clinic on pressuring Bryce Young. He could have had four or five more sacks if Bryce Young weren't so elusive. But they were showing one thing and going another. And then they would show it and bring it. And then they would show pressure on this side and come over. I mean, they were just Alabama's offensive line. They didn't know if it was coming or going. And it was amazing that Bama was able to fight all the way back to be in the position that they were in. Mm-hmm. And I think Bryce Young's creativity had a lot to do with that. But it just had the feeling. Didn't feel like, all right, I'll tell you. A&M played hard. I'll tell you. Jimbo had them ready. They're going to lose, but I mean, he had them ready. They deserve a lot of credit. But Nick's going to find a way, win it ugly, move on. That's how it felt. The whole game.
When the block punt.
Here we go. Yep. Here it is.
And then Devin Achane returns the kick.
I know.
And then I'm thinking, oh, hell, like A&M really is like, they're different. Like, this is a different week. And the second the block punt happened, I'm like, here we go. And then the turn.
This is why I love this sport. And last year was so hard for all of us who love this sport. The crowd and the scene at the Cotton Bowl impacted that game. The crowd and the scene at Kinnick at Iowa City impacted that game. And without a doubt, the 12th man at Kyle Field coming alive after that kickoff return, because I think they were like us, block punt. Oh no, it looked so good. And it was like, oh no. And then bang, that return, that stadium came back alive and they helped be a difference. So that's why we love this sport. And you could talk about that all over the country in these games where with a home field advantage and the juice and the crowd, Lexington, Kentucky, this past weekend, how fired up are they right now? Oxford. I mean, it was, how great is it to have fans back and to have energy back in these stadiums? It's just, even Lincoln was fired up.
Lincoln looked great.
It looked awesome. You know, they do, their game ops is second to none. You know, they do a great job there. But yeah, A&M, awesome win. Congratulations. And I can't wait to see how they respond to this, because if you look at their schedule, again, on paper, I'd be careful this weekend after an emotional win taking on Missouri. Missouri's 3-0 at home. Missouri can't win on the road, but they're dangerous at home, and they got a quarterback and an offense that can score. So if you're reading the press clippings and patting yourself on the back, you're going to be in a war. 11 a.m. kick.
Yep,
11 a.m. kick in Columbia. Be careful. You're going to go from one extreme at the 12th man in Kyle Field to another with an 11 a.m. kick. So you better get your sleep on Friday night and be ready to roll. But they have Missouri. They're going to be, obviously, they're favored. South Carolina, heavily favored. Auburn at home, going to be heavily favored. At Mississippi, tough, right?
Tricky, yeah, that's a trick.
Prairie View, whatever. And then LSU on the road. Who knows what the hell is going to be going on with LSU at that point. So Ole Miss is the one game that you would think with Lane Kiffin that it could potentially, you know, be a shootout kind of game. But, you know, I just want to see how a team that's been a roller coaster of emotions, how will they respond to a historic win? I mean, that was a first time we've seen a Nick Saban former assistant beat him. And A&M hasn't had a win like that at Kyle Field in a long time. And it was cool to see Johnny Manziel down there and taking it all in. And man, it was just a big night to be an Aggie. I was happy for him.
19-point underdog. So many streaks came into an end. The 100-game winning streak against unranked opponents. The 19 consecutive wins that Alabama strung together. And now that SEC West, perhaps we didn't think there'd be too much drama after what Alabama did to Ole Miss and Arkansas dropping now two in a row. And look, it's still Alabama's to lose. They're 2-1 in the division. Yep. Ole Miss is 1-1. They would have to have something fluky happen. But what Alabama has done is they've taken away that house money in the SEC championship. In that, if it's Georgia, Alabama, Georgia's got to get through Kentucky. We'll get to that one in a minute. But let's just say it's Georgia, Alabama, like we expect. We all thought that a one-loss SEC team coming out of the SEC championship would also get in. Alabama can't, like, their house money for that, I think, is gone. You're not going to have, even if it's a field goal win for Georgia in the SEC championship game, it's over.
Yeah. Yeah. And I almost feel in a weird way, I'm not saying Nick Saban wanted to lose the game, but action with the halftime interview, his attitude in the post game, he warned everybody all week.
He did.
He said, this is a tricky game. We're set up here. This is going to be a tough game. And everyone's like, yeah. They just lost two games, coach. Didn't you see they lost to Arkansas? Mississippi? Get out of here with that. Quit playing that up. Bingo. I almost feel like deep down, he'll never say this, deep down with maybe this particular team. And if you look at their history, other than 11-12, and they went back to back, they always win it. And then they just lose just a little edge, and then they get mad. And then the next year they typically either win it or they're right there. This team in Gainesville and this team at Kyle Field, just not quite as disciplined, as sharp. And I guarantee you, he's been warning them in practice about the littlest details are what cost you games. You boys are not listening. You don't get it. And I almost feel like deep down, a loss, as you say, Matt, backs them into a corner. They can't lose another game, including in Atlanta, right, if they get there. And maybe this team needed to feel no margin of error, boys. This is what you wanted. This is what you've been practicing. This is what you got. All right. You're going to respond to this? Like, that's what I feel, that because he was not at halftime, like, yeah, you know, he didn't want to hit something. Like, he was just like, he was almost like, try to tell you guys.
Yeah, you want to listen. It was kind of like a hands up. It's like, man, I told you so. Like, you guys are making fun of me. Well, here it is. Here we go. Yourself out of it.
Yeah.
You know?
So I almost feel like deep down in quiet, dark places inside his mind, he's at peace with this. And now he's going to turn the screws on his team. And I would not want to be Mississippi State this week. This is not a good week to play them after a game like that, if they're the Alabama team that we all think they, at least on paper, appear to be. But the mindset of a great Alabama team is always what separates every team has five stars at Alabama. The mindset, avoiding complacency, playing with discipline every week, every play, those are the teams that go on to do great things. Is this that team? We'll see how they handle the adversity. By the way, real quick in the SEC, Tennessee sitting there at 4-2. Josh Heupel has this offense. Hendon Hooker, I mean, they're scoring points. I don't care who they're playing right now. You better be ready to defend what Tennessee can do, running and throwing and all the tempo that they're throwing at you. You touched on Kentucky. You know, Mark Stoops, 6-0.
It's unbelievable.
First time, I think I heard on your show, 50 years, is that right?
Yeah. It's been.
Who was the coach 50 years? That wasn't Bear Bryant, was it? That would probably be further back.
Yeah, I don't think
whoever it was, can we hear it from Mark Stoops? I mean, the job that he has done in his ninth year in Lexington, you know, he's got his hands full. He's down some starters, by the way. Going down to Athens this week, taking on a Georgia team who, by the way, speaking of being down starters, they're down starters. You know, their receivers right now, Ladd McConkey of walk-on is their top receiver. He had over 100 yards this past week against Auburn and looked great. By the way, he's a really talented guy. But I think they're down 7 receivers if you include Pickens and everybody else.
Yep.
So they're just kind of holding on. On that side of the ball, they got some guys dinged up on defense. So Kentucky, we're at that point in the season, guys, you know, depth and guys that aren't maybe don't have a lot of game experience, they're going to be out there in some big games. And that's going to be the case for the Kentucky Wildcats as they travel and try to find a way to win. And then Ole Miss, 52-51. I was calling the OU-Texas game during that time, but, you know, somebody had to bounce back from a week ago, and it ends up being Ole Miss, who, you know, Matt Corral, he threw 6 interceptions in this game a year ago, and they came back and said, okay, Barry Odom, you're going to drop 8 on us. We're going to be conservative with our passing game. We're not going to force the ball. Henry Parrish is going to go crazy if you're going to let us run the ball. And Snoop Connor is going to run the football as well. Corral ran the football. I think they ended up having, you know, 5 rushing touchdowns. And I think they looked
Corral had a pair of them.
Yeah, they looked at what Georgia did and said, okay, if people are going to rush 3, drop 8, we got to punish them at the line of scrimmage. And, you know, he spent his entire offseason, Lane Kiffin and Jeff Lebby, with everybody's going to copy Arkansas because we threw 6 picks. We got to run the ball, and we got to have a conservative short and intermediate passing game, and that's going to be our answer. And it was good enough, just enough, to take on an Arkansas team that just, to me, you know, I can't wait to see where Arkansas is in December. You know, can they get to an 8-win season? It would be remarkable considering who they have to play. But they have turned the corner so much as a program from where they were before Sam Pittman got there.
Yeah, you can build on this. Sam Pittman can build on this. Josh Heupel at Tennessee can build on this. You talk about a team that's got nothing left over from the transfer portal. These are schools now that if you want Tennessee to be where they were back in the day, you can build on this because you've got the quarterback. You've got some of the guys that are buying into Heupel. And I'm with you. This is the time. Like, I find I divide the season in 2s, well, usually 3s, but now we're at the halfway point. The stories are developed. Now it's how you finish, because depth, you had mentioned it. Some of these teams that have been good stories, Kentucky, who's another great story early part of the season, or Arkansas was a good story at the early part of the season. Iowa's a good story. Now it's where you separate yourselves. Is this first half who you are, or is there depth issues, or were there scheduling issues? It's going to be fascinating because, look, I think the SEC, I think the Big Ten, ACC, it's sad. I mean, Wake Forest is good, but I don't know that Wake Forest is going to get the respect they deserve being 6-0 with Dave Clawson. They needed overtime at the Dome to beat Syracuse. So there are enough leagues out there going into the halfway point of the season. We thought we knew the SEC, and then Alabama gets bounced. You know, the Big Ten East is the best conference or division in football. You mentioned who's coming out of there. There's just so much up for grabs, and I love it.
Yeah, it is fun. It's been, I don't know. We came into this year just probably the most anticipated season for me in the 26 years I've covered college football because of the year that we were coming off of a year ago. Just, I was so excited to imagine tailgating and imagine fans and imagine right. The energy that these stadiums have to offer. Who knew that we had what we had coming? Like every Saturday I get, you know, I'm on my way back home and I'm just like, how great is this sport? How great is this, man? Like, I don't care who you're a fan of. If you're just a fan of the sport, you're flipping channels around. It just got so much to offer, you know, from noon to midnight, if not later. And there's no other sport that does that. No other sport that provides this kind of passion and emotion and huge moments. Here we go, 4th down, game's on the line, crowd's going crazy. It's like every game you're flipped to, you got that kind of stuff going on. So yeah, it's been terrific. We've got a story, you know, we've got these group of 5 teams, you know, BYU before they lost to Boise, they're not a group of 5, but they're an independent. They looked like they were going to be in the mix. They get upset. Cincinnati is obviously a story. They looked great on Friday night against Temple, along with the Arizona State Sun Devils, looking athletic again against Stanford. They're teams that, you know, you get caught up in the top 10, you start to kind of work your way down. You touched on Wake, which I'm happy you did. SMU continuing to win football games. They're undefeated. And then San Diego State, man. I mean, they're playing great football, and this seemed like every year they are beating people in the Pac-12 and trying to remind people that they know how to play ball out there.
Yeah, Brady Hoke, career renaissance out there in San Diego. Yeah. And And I tell people, you know, the love of the sport is easy to show these big games that we did and what I thought was one of the all-time week as we've had in quite some time. But I'll tell you what drives home the beauty of this sport for me. The celebration in the locker room after UMass got their first win in 16 tries. Think about that for a minute. UMass and UConn, they had the 2 years they hadn't won, 16 games. They were celebrating in the locker room like they had just won the national championship because it just meant that much to them. You can go down to the worst teams in the sport, 130 out of 130, and they're celebrating because they earned it and they deserved it. And to me, I mean, from top to bottom, it was just if Kirk, if I wanted to explain to someone, let's say coming over from Iceland and saying, hey, what's your favorite? Well, college football is your favorite sport. Well, why is that? I would make a reel of this last weekend. Press play for them and say, hey, this is why we love what we do and we love the sport.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. And last thing, I want you to have a chance to talk about Arizona State. Is this, if you look at the last, I don't know, go back to 96 and to now, is it the best team you think, or is it just they're off to a good start? Are you ready to like look at them that they potentially could be that kind of team, the team that went to the Rose Bowl in 96?
I think it's exactly that kind of team. I mean, they have more talent, I think, when you look at it as a whole.
That was a good team.
J.R. Redmond was a freshman. Keith Poole, the receiver, obviously. Tillman was on there. Juan Roque, the offensive line was really good. Not many NFLers. And when you look at the actual Sunday talent, you look at this Arizona State team, there's Sunday talent everywhere. And I said it last week on the pod, and I'll say it again, if you didn't listen to last week, the team that we've seen the last 2.5 weeks, that's the team. And you'd be hard pressed. They've got Utah this week. I think Utah always gives them issues. USC looks dead, but they'll find a way to rise up every once in a while. ASU for me right now is the best team in the Pac-12.
Yeah.
With the injuries Oregon has going on. Mm-hmm. This team is very similar to that year that you mentioned with the Rose Bowl year, because they have the right pieces at every position and they have a coach who's got these guys to buy into what's going on over the last month. And I think they're really good.
They're fun to watch and they're so athletic. I'm going to ask you a question just because you live it. I kind of paid attention a little bit to all the story, but I didn't really roll up my sleeves on it. Is the NCAA involved in looking at them? Are they okay for the 2021 season? Is there nothing to the story? I don't know. What's the deal?
Yeah, it's an ongoing investigation. They put three of their assistant coaches, some of their best recruiters, on paid administrative leave. You typically, when you do that, you know, the coaches aren't coming back. Is when that happens, but the investigation is going on as we speak, and there's going to be something to this sooner than later. It takes time, these investigations, for the recruiting violations or alleged recruiting violations during COVID, during the dead period. And so that weighed heavily on these guys. That's weighed heavily on Herm. That's weighed heavily on Antonio Pierce, because their integrity.
Are these big potential sanctions?
From what I understand, they could be, but it's uncharted waters. When's the last time we had a dead period during a 100-year pandemic? We haven't. And so they're trying to figure out who and what and how and how big the violations are. I think the 2021 season, this season is fine. I think this one's safe. When they come down with it, it remains to be seen. They haven't started interviewing the coaches yet. They've done the interviewing of all the players that were on these alleged visits and the parents and all of that. So they're going to start poking in sooner than later. And I would bet probably by the end of the year, they start interviewing all the coaches.
So are you thinking like scholarship reductions, probation, potential bowl ban?
That's what I would look at. I would look at scholarship. I would look at a ding in scholarships. I would look at too, you know, knowing Ray Anderson and Dr. Crow and how they handle things there. I would not be surprised if there was one of those self-induced bowl bans at some point. Like, hey, we're going to punish ourselves. We're going to take away some scholarships, maybe self-induced bowl ban, and then hopefully be done with it. But yeah, I mean, it's something. It's not nothing. And that was kind of the hard part to convince the players. It's like, guys, we can't do anything about that. And you know, college football players as good as anyone. They say that they don't pay attention to anything outside the walls, but people do. And so now I think they finally got to the point where they're just like, well, hell with it. We can't control what the NCAA is going to do. Let's just go play football. Because when we play football, we're actually a pretty good team.
Yeah, that's how they've looked. You're right. Last few weeks, man, they look like they're playing just free and loose and just turning it, letting it go. They're like a very talented team, very athletic, and defense can fly too. So it's a gauntlet in the Pac-12. I mean, you're playing all those conference games. Often you don't have any weeks off. I think they have one coming up after this week. I think they have a week off, but be fun to see if they can make a run. You know, you get out there with one loss. They're one loss to BYU. See if they can keep winning games.
And that's it. That's a perfect example as we wrap up here. The Pac-12, they're just kind of out there. No one's talking about them, but you get a one-loss team that's playing well with all the carnage that's in front of us and all these other divisions around the country. This second half, I tell you what, this is a good halftime. I can't wait to come out of the locker room for this second half. It's going to be fun.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And, hey, you touched on your alma mater. I'm going to touch on Ohio State.
Yeah, let's go Buckeyes. Yeah.
Because we haven't talked a lot about them. The main reason in recent weeks, they just haven't played anybody. They're off this week, but things are about to get really interesting. We keep thinking, you know, has Ohio State improved as much as they look? Or is it just maybe just their opponent? Because remember, they lost to Oregon. They didn't look that much better considering it was Tulsa defensively. They gave up a ton of yards. And then they made some switches. And we've seen that, you know, them look – I don't care who – at this point, I didn't even care who they were playing. They played Akron at Rutgers and Maryland. And Maryland's had some injuries at the receiver spot. But they played a lot better. Their offense – let's just make one thing perfectly clear. C.J. Stroud is your guy.
Yeah,
and he's got the best trio of receivers on one team in the country. And he's got a freshman running back that's probably the top freshman back in the country, one of the top freshmen in general. They got an offensive line. You got an NFL tight end and Ruckert. They're going to score 45 points a game. Just there it is. Doesn't matter. So do they have to – are they going to get to a point? Because it gets tough. At Indiana, Penn State, at Nebraska. Those aren't easy games, by the way. Purdue at home, Michigan State at Michigan. So they get a bye week, and then they roll up their sleeves for that second half, and then we find out how good they really are. They're going to get a chance to show it. They will not have to need help. It's all right in front of them. They play number 7, number 10, number 8, and if they end up playing Iowa, number 2. So yeah. you'll find out how much that defense has improved. But right now, they are trending in a very good direction off of that loss to Oregon. But again, we don't know yet. Is that a reflection of how much they've improved, or is that because of who they played? The next 2 to 3 weeks, we'll get answers on Ohio State.
I told Galloway this week, and I said, man, they're starting to look like Ohio State. And that's scary for a lot of people, because I know Iowa is the story right now. Michigan State, Kenneth Walker, Peyton Thorne, Jalen Naylor, like that's a good team, Michigan, but I don't know. I Ohio State looks very Ohio State, and I'm with you. We're going to know. It's all in front of them. It's all in their schedule. Yep. Go play, yep. And if you're Ohio State, you're going to be in the playoffs. Simple as that.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. I mean, and going to Indiana, going to Nebraska, those are not easy games, especially, you know, when you're Ohio State and you show up, it's like when Alabama shows up somewhere. I mean, everybody in their conference wants to take them down. And those are supposed to be the gimmies, by the way. You know, when you're playing Michigan – those are the easy games at Indiana and at Nebraska. When you're playing Penn State, Michigan State, and at Michigan, people look past those games. So pretty much other than Purdue at home, every other game is a test and just to see how much they've improved. I can't wait to see it. I think they're a lot better. We know they, again, offensively, not an issue. I think they've improved defensively, but let's see here in the next 2 weeks.
So first half of the season, this podcast has been amazing, and I can't remember the last time we're going to be able to say this thing is wide open, and that sets us up for something special. So looking forward to it. Enjoy Athens this week, and you're in Athens, Lexington?
Yeah, Athens in the morning for game day, and then fly to Norman for TCU in Oklahoma
There we go.
See what's going on with Caleb Williams and Spencer Rattler and the Sooners. Let's see how they respond to that emotional win against Texas.
It's all right in front of us, as is this podcast each and every Monday. We appreciate the download. Kirk, always love recapping this week with you, but especially this week as we embark on the second half of a season unlike anything we've ever seen.
See you, buddy. Have a good week.
All right. Likewise.